Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome in to episode 226 of the Source State Podcast, your go-to Kentucky basketball and recruiting podcast on the growing KSR Podcast Network. Source State Podcast is, as always, presented by our good friends at Justice Dental. Visit one of their two Lexington locations, that's on Blazer Parkway and Wellington Way, by scheduling an appointment online at justicedental.com or by calling 859-543-0700. You can even send a text message to one of their friendly team members at the same number to ask a question or make an appointment. Now is a great time to schedule your dental cleaning. Dr. Thompson, Dr. Justice, and their team strive to provide you with good oral health in a comfortable environment. The Justice Dental team looks forward to seeing you soon. I'm your host, Jack Pilgrim of Kentucky Sports Radio. Very happy to be joined by KSR's own Stephen Peek, our trusty videographer and admittedly the most passionate Kentucky fan I have ever met. Stephen, how the heck are you?
I'm doing good. I'm trying to stay awake. We're on this road to Missouri. It is brutal. I don't know if this camera's getting it, but this has mostly been our view the whole time. Just nothing.
You made this trip for the football game, and you were very outspoken about how terrible this drive is. So rather than just doing an audio, holding up the microphone, voice memos as we're driving, we wanted to let fans in on this experience. And if we have to suffer through this drive, you do too. So while we're doing this, you're going to be watching us drive through the middle of nowhere where we saw a... I don't know what it was, a horse family riding through the night, like 3 degrees outside. They're right. Just
it's a good time to go for a ride on your horse.
Yeah, riding through cornfields in their family of horses. I don't know. I don't know what the point of that is. But that's what we're seeing right now. As of right now, it is nothing but empty fields and nothingness. We're not even getting like windmills or anything kind of just interesting. It's nothing but flat land all the way through Missouri. And I'm not having a good time.
No, I mean, you know, we're trying to make the best of it. So that's why we're recording this. And we've been talking Kentucky basketball pretty much the whole way. But, man, it is a long 5.5 hours of just – we'll get to St. Louis eventually, and we'll see the arch for, like, 2 minutes. Columbia is a nice town. It's just getting there is just – from Kentucky is just brutal. It's no fun.
So this game in particular wasn't supposed to be that important going into the year. This was one that I think nobody had – circled on their schedules going into the season with all the non-conference lead up and, you know, all the hype games, Gonzaga, Michigan, Michigan State. You know, everybody was excited for those games, and then this was kind of a dud to get us to the new year, the Louisville game, and then the real start of SEC play. Look, I mean, as of this past week, Missouri is one of the hottest teams in college basketball, coming off a win over number 16 Illinois, a blowout 20-point win where Missouri was firing on all cylinders. Their offense is amazing. Five different players averaging in double figures. So this game has now become kind of a, not a must-win for Kentucky, but a huge, huge way to start the SEC schedule, Stephen. One that I personally wasn't, I mean, we weren't even planning on making this trip.
I was going to say, this drive sucks so bad that as much as I wanted to see Kentucky play their first SEC game of the season, I was against this trip, but we kind of, them having the season that they've had and beating Illinois kind of forced our hand, and now here we are. So
So Missouri is, as I said, they're firing on all cylinders, five different players averaging in double figures. Their offense is unbelievable, averaging 88 points a game, definitely a run and gun type of style of play. I think that this is a game that can that they're going to want to get into a track meet that plays to their advantage, to you know, its best. But I think on Kentucky's end, I think it definitely plays into it, to its favor. Something that we've been waiting to see instead of the kind of grinded out offense that we've seen under John Calipari this year, stalling things out in the first half. I don't think Kentucky is going to get a rock fight tonight. I think this might be the most entertaining game we've gotten in quite some time, and I definitely think it will favor Kentucky in that regard, Stephen.
Yeah, and you had mentioned before we started recording this, and as we've been talking about this game on the way there, is Kentucky might be the best defensive team that they'll play. And I want to see the game open up a little bit. If anything, just to get some guys seeing the ball go through the basket in a meaningful game. I mean, we saw C.J. Frederick hit several threes in the last outing, but I want to see them do that in a game that's meaningful. This is your first true road game. I mean, Gonzaga, you were there. Was that a road environment?
For my money, it was. If you talk to them, they'll say, well, unless we're playing at the Kennel, then it's not, you know,
yeah,
this isn't a true road environment. But it was 98% Gonzaga fans, and they were as rowdy as anything as I could personally remember in recent memory. So for my money, it was a true road game, but this is the first true official road game.
And we're expecting there to be a pretty good Missouri
sold
crowd.
Out. It's officially a sellout.
I'm looking forward to seeing Kentucky. Like you said, the Missouri averages 88 points a game. Kentucky wants to average 80 a game. But in these meaningful games, the Kentucky's record's 8-3, right? I mean, I guess that's right. I don't really care about what the record is. In my book, they're 1-3. Trying to be positive, but in these meaningful games, I want to see Kentucky's offense open up a little bit. So even if, you know, Missouri's maybe not the best defensive team that Kentucky's going to play, if there's somebody who wants to run with Kentucky, under Calipari, haven't we just wanted to see teams try to run with the Cats? Because that's usually when they get in trouble.
Yeah.
They try to keep up. And I think Kentucky has, Drew and I talked about this in New York, this roster, I love this roster. Mm-hmm. There's not many, I don't know of many players across college basketball that I would just, you know, want to replace some of our guys for. Obviously they exist, but this is a good roster. Can we just look at it as the season starts over today? Go for an SEC championship. Haven't had one of those since the COVID year, or since the year was canceled from COVID. So, I mean, you know, I want to see Kentucky come out strong in the SEC, play for an SEC championship, and I'm excited about tonight. This is the first SEC road game that I've seen Kentucky play in person, so wow. I'm anxious for the environment and everything.
Yeah, and I think if you like, you never want to downgrade an opponent. Missouri is a hell of a team. They have a lot of talent, led by Kobe Brown, just coming off SEC Player of the Week honors. He's coming off a 31-point performance against Illinois. He was at the top of the scouting report. We talked to KT Turner yesterday. He said that is the guy that we are all in on. We cannot let him get rolling. He's super versatile. It, you know, kind of reminds me of the Julian Strother, what we saw with Gonzaga, just a guy who can beat you in so many different ways, and, you know, is a trail three-point specialist. He's a guy that could really, really hurt Kentucky. But is it wrong of me to say that Missouri's kind of been a little bit of fool's gold this year so far? The numbers look good, the record looks amazing, but they haven't played anybody of substance leading up to this most recent win. They got absolutely destroyed against Kansas, looked okay against Central Michigan, or Central Florida looked okay on a win against Wichita State. So this is a team that they've gotten some okay wins. They had the one statement win against Illinois. On paper, I think that this game is definitely one that everybody's going to, you know, be super excited about, and you know, a huge game in that regard. But I think this is a huge opportunity for Kentucky to maybe make a statement of its own, because I think all eyes are on, you know, this program and its offensive struggles. And I think it is going to be a big night, you know, Wednesday night, SEC Network game. I think there's going to be a lot of attention on this game. You look at all the national reporters are saying this is one of the best games of today's slate. So I think with so much attention on this game, it could be a great opportunity for Kentucky to kind of get that statement win, maybe get some offense, you know, like you said, just get some players seeing the ball fall through the net. You know, C.J. Frederick could be a huge opportunity for him. Antonio Reeves, guys like that. You could really get them going, score a ton of points against admittedly a pretty poor defensive team in Missouri. I think that this could be a game that Kentucky could actually win pretty handily. You know, if you're looking to make a statement win, if you play to your strengths, I think Kentucky could capitalize on that and do kind of what Kansas did just a few weeks ago.
Yeah, and I think, speaking for Kentucky fans, you take a one-point win from today.
Absolutely.
I mean, you just get out
gotta
with a
get
win.
A win here. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, taking another loss to a Power 5 team. You know, really, I thought this would be a chance for Kentucky to get a ranked win. I was kind of – I know, like, I agree with you. I mean, they haven't clearly played anybody. In the first time they played somebody, Kansas, they get blown out. But, I mean, Missouri looked pretty good against Illinois. And, you know, maybe that was a fluky performance. But I kind of thought we would be playing – I kind of thought Kentucky would be playing a top 25 team today. But still, being able to come into that the Louisville game, coming off a win, I mean, you're not going to lose that game.
Yeah.
And that's two wins against Power Five teams. We'll use air quotes there in describing Louisville, but then you get into the heart of the SEC schedule, and as I've said, this is an opportunity to reset. Like, everybody just reset from a fan base perspective, from a team perspective, that you're 0-0 coming into today, and all the struggles we saw in the Michigan State game and the UCLA game, just can we forget about them? I want to ask you this though: you wrote a story just about 15 minutes ago. you had to crank out like an 800-word story in about 15 minutes. It's pretty impressive. But what was the big news there?
So we're not getting Chris Livingston at the four, as I think a lot of Kentucky fans have been wanting desperately. He played extremely well at the four in limited, the Florida A&M game really was not a great example of anything rotation-wise, position-wise, things like that, because they were a horrible team. Florida A&M was not a good team, and I think Cal kind of knew that going into it, and that's why he got so creative with the lineups. You got to see Ugana on Yenzo, and Oscar Shibo play together. Lance Ware started at the four alongside Oscar, with Chris Livingston at the three. You got to do minutes. He played some at the four. There was a whole lot of just mixing and matching there across the board. Got a lot of minutes there for Kaysen Wallace, playing the lead point guard role there down the stretch. Got to see what he was like with the kind of keys in hand, and he put forth his best performance of the year, but it was against terrible competition. However, it led to a kind of epiphany moment for John Calipari, which I don't know if it's one that Kentucky fans will agree with, that Adu Thiro needs to be playing the four and Chris Livingston needs to be playing the three. And looking at the quote and the actual specifics on that, it was because Cal likes those two together. He likes the versatility they bring together, having two 6'6", 6'7"-ish kind of big physical guards of sorts on the floor together alongside a Kaysen and a Xavier. Maybe you take Xavier out and add more shooting with C.J. Frederick or Antonio Reeves. Just allows you to have more versatility at that position with Oscar at the five. If you think of it in a big picture perspective, I think I like it a lot more than just on paper, Adu Thiro at the four and Chris Livingston at the three.
Yeah, well, okay, so I went back and kind of watched some old John Calipari teams. One of them in particular, 2012 team. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist and Terrence Jones played that 3-4 there. We've been talking about, I think basketball, we already know, has kind of changed. You can go four guards. I really feel like Chris Livingston has the physicality to play the four, but gives you that dynamic of your four being able to shoot threes. Now, I mean, I don't know if the arrow is the answer. I don't think Lance Ware is the answer. I know Cal has been flirting with that lineup, too. There's one lineup, Jack, will we ever see it? And this is my five, and it was Kaysen Wallace at the one, C.J. Frederick at the two or the three, and Reeves playing the two or the three, and then Chris Livingston at the four and Oscar at the five. I don't know. I feel like it's a national title starting or five, a five-man team right there. That's I like any of those guys shooting the ball, even Oscar from mid-range. I like all, this is what I hate about this. Look at this. Like, you can't see it on podcast, but
construction that with they're not even really doing anything. It's making a one-lane road. It's just terrible. Absolutely terrible. It's wet. It's ugly. It's just terrible.
This drive. The worst part is we got to do it again on the way back.
Yeah, another five and a half hours of this. I will say, what is the common theme with what you just said about the different players, the in and out, the different players of the three, the four, versatility there, trying out Lance Ware, trying out Chris Livingston, trying out Adu Thiro. The common theme with all of this is no Jacob Toppin. And I think that there is something to be said about, I don't know, call me a conspiracy theorist, call me a skeptic, I don't know, whatever you want to say. I think the Florida A&M game, the starting Lance at the four, all the talk after the game about we need physicality, we need toughness, the message basically leading up to that game, the last week and a half, 2 weeks, the entire message has been we need toughness, we need physicality, we need somebody who's going to bring their effort every single play, every single possession. Chin Coleman had a quote 2 weeks ago where he said that, they're Jacob Toppin needs to be an everyday kind of guy, not an every other day, not an every, he said that it gets to the point where it's every other possession, every other play, you never know what you're going to get out of him. It's just too much inconsistency with Jacob Toppin. I think the Florida A&M game was entirely a message directed at Jacob Toppin as a we will figure out a backup plan if you're not going to be the guy to step up and be the guy that we need you to be at the four. And I think that that's kind of what this is. If Toppin can't be the guy with that star potential that everybody kind of thought, what we saw out of him in the Bahamas, then I think it now is the time to start figuring out a contingency plan, start to come up with that backup plan, because he was a guy that was supposed to be leaned on and, you know, maybe even a breakout star on this team, and he just has not been that guy. He hasn't had had the defensive intensity that Kentucky has needed, hasn't been physical, been shying away from contact, kind of floating on the perimeter for, mm-hmm. you know, mid-range jump shots, three-point jump shots. He just has not been that guy that Kentucky needed. And I think the Florida A&M game was the perfect example of Cal wanting to make a message, wanting to make a statement that if you're not going to be that guy for us, we're going to find somebody else who is.
Hey, Cal had mentioned something, I think maybe it was the game before UCLA, that was like, you know, you have this great vertical. I'd love to see it mm-hmm. when you go get rebounds.
You have a 40-inch vertical. Yeah. Use all 40 inches of it, is what he said.
yeah, exactly. And I we talked before the season on one of these episodes that I said that I thought that Jacob Toppin would be one of the best players in America. I mean,
paper.
Yeah, he has the athleticism. I like his jump shot. It's just not going in right now. But yeah, Jacob Toppin has been maybe, you know, one of the bigger disappointments. I don't think I'm being too critical of him. I say that because I think he could very easily be one of the best players in the country.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be this much of a disappointment if we didn't have such high expectations for him. And maybe they were too lofty expectations. I mean, I really did think he was, and it's still December. A lot of season left and a lot of time for him to figure it out and come around and be a contributor on the team. And you know more about this than I do, but he was one of those guys that was in there working on his jump shot, shot the most shots, I think, in practice with that shot tracker.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know how much confidence is playing into it, and I know maybe it's hard when you're missing shots to find different ways to contribute to your team's success. And, you know, Cal always talks about, he's talked about that for years, like, you're going to help us on the defensive end, you're going to get rebounds, you're going to find another way to help us win this game since the shots aren't going in. I think the shots will eventually fall, and maybe today in a game that can be more open, Toppin sees the floor, sees a couple shots go down.
Get the
confidence going a little bit.
Does it remind you at all of last season when the team kind of hit their rut? It was the Notre Dame game where everybody thought, you know, all hell had broken loose. The team had no offensive identity. Everything was just terrible. You know, this and that. I remember that so vividly. And they responded with that stretch of the WKU game,
the UNC
game, and then the Kansas game.
Yep.
And those three games back to back to back kind of opened things up for Kentucky and really started kind of letting them find their groove, and it, you know, led to a stretch in January where Kentucky was like the best team in college basketball.
They scored 107 against Tennessee, right?
This feels like that type of game that mm-hmm. could get you take care of business in Columbia. Ideally, on paper, it looked like a sensational win. It'd be a quad one win, true road game. On paper, this would look amazing on Kentucky.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Kentucky's resume. Transition that into what could be a very feel-good game, feel-good win for Kentucky against Louisville. Rivalry game, rivalry matchup. If you find a way to dog walk them, run them off the floor, build that momentum and get that offensive identity, you know, cruising, and then I think you can start playing with fire a little bit. I think they're feeling a lot better about where things stand offensively going into the real bulk of the SEC schedule, and then in January you get the Kansas game, and you know that's when the real fun will begin. But I just feel like this stretch could again, on paper, ideally, theoretically, it could lead to a stretch of, you know, I think things starting to come together for this offense that is now ranked, looking at it, 199.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, Quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
In quality efficiency, yeah. Teams ranked in the top 50, so teams worth a damn, essentially.
Yeah.
They're 199 in college basketball, which is just simply unacceptable. And they got
with this roster.
They have to start finding out identity. They have to, move that ball more, run more stuff. I mean, how often do you hear Oscar Sheboy flat out say, "I need us to run more stuff"? Kentucky's star player, national player of the year, says that Kentucky needs to run more stuff. That's an issue.
He also said we need to spread out more. He said in the UCLA game, he told the media, maybe it wasn't right after that game, I think it was one of the next games, but he said, I was saying, coach, they're double teaming me. They were like quadruple teaming him sometimes. And I sent you that one screenshot. There were four guys around the perimeter who were wide open. I think Oscar was even called for a foul there. But they want, wanting to force feed the ball down to him. I look at Oscar as like, he is the reason that you should be just shooting the ball from, if you get an open look, take it. Because you might, even if you miss it, Oscar might get the rebound and get a put back. I want to see something. Whether they win by 20 or win by 1 point today, I just want to see better ball movement. I want to see them have fun. I haven't seen this team have fun yet. Like, they, from Big Blue Madness to, through the UCLA game, does it look like they're having fun? I mean, everything's been like this business-like approach to every game. And then when you get to the bigger games, you just see everybody just feels like they just tighten up. And you're not going to win very many games against good teams when you're playing like that. I don't know if that starts with the coaching staff. I do feel like nationally, even, not just here in Kentucky, there's a little bit of like a pressure on Calipari. Do you feel like that might be the case?
Well, pressure on these players as well. Six returning players from the team that lost to St. Peter's. I feel like that pressure of, this has to be a team. Even Oscar Sheboy has been tight in games and missing shots, and he shouldn't. His entire mantra this entire offseason was, "I'm not coming back for the individual accolades. I'm coming back to win a national championship for Kentucky." It looks amazing in headlines. Trust me, we know. We wrote them. It was it's sensational. Yeah. But what pressure does that put on yourself where everything relies on a national championship? What they're saying right now is, we understand that we couldn't get over that hump in postseason play last year, and now none of this matters until they get past that first weekend. And then once then that happens, the pressure kind of gets off the shoulders, and then you can loosen up a little bit. But it does feel like they're not having any fun, because it is so much pressure on them to not be the team that they were last year. And I said this on last week's show, UCLA was baffled at Kentucky's game plan. They left almost like laughing at, I can't believe that this team with so much talent is so terrible at passing the ball. Ball movement is so bad. They're so one-dimensional. They're so predictable. They pass it inside to Oscar Sheboy and just stop moving on the perimeter. Yeah. Let him do whatever he wants to do. Pass it back out at the end of the shot clock for a, last-second heat for Xavier Wheeler or, whatever the case is. The offense just has no identity. There's no rhyme or reason to anything that they're doing. And that left UCLA going, I can't believe we won that game the way we did. Double-digit win in the CBS Sports Classic in a game that, admittedly, the two teams, talent-wise, Kentucky should run circles around UCLA. So, Adembona was the star, quote-unquote, center for UCLA, who, was a backup option for Kentucky during the recruiting process. So it's just, little things like that that I don't think UCLA thought they were as talented as Kentucky was, but that ended up not mattering because of the other things that went so poorly for Kentucky. So that stuff has to get fixed. It just really feels like tonight is a huge opportunity for Kentucky to get some of those things fixed. How great would it be, Steven, to just get a 95-point performance, just go out there and just spray, just knock down a bunch of shots, let C.J. Frederick get hot in a game that matters. Again, he got things rolling against Florida A&M, but they suck. We didn't learn anything from that Florida A&M game outside of the fact that they were not very good. So
that every team inside Rupp Arena always hits threes, no matter who they are. Yeah. We learned that. That would be great. 95 points, win 95
or something like that. You know 98. Yeah. Shoot, I'd be comfortable with 80 at
would
this
be
point.
Good. Yeah. Yeah, 80. That's the you want to average 80 points per game. You start with averaging 80, in the SEC, and that would start with tonight. But and on the flip side, we've talked about what, that they could have a big game today, maybe even win, running away, and that this could be the start of, a kind of a turning the page on the season a little bit and getting things back on the right track. But is there a scenario where the worst case scenario happens? And I don't see Kentucky getting run off the floor tonight.
Ooh.
And but is there a scenario where, they come out with another 10-point loss, and what does that look like?
So their two best players are shooting over 42% from three. As a team, they're shooting a full 37-ish percent from three. So when they do get hot, they get extremely hot. That's what happened against Illinois. When they're firing on all cylinders, they can beat pretty much anybody. So to say that losing, and especially in losing that type of fashion, like we just saw Illinois do, who has beaten some pretty solid teams, UCLA being one of them, it is a scary thought, because this is kind of the feel-good win. Like, this is the one that on paper it's kind of building up to the perfect storybook moment for Kentucky to kind of send the season off, kind of get rid of the bad taste, the first third of the season out of your mouth and focus on the second and third thirds of the season. This is the perfect opportunity, and it's just a scenario I don't even want to envision unfolding, because
that ride back is going to be so long.
That'd be worst case scenario. that right there, I think, would be an all-time low. Like, I don't know how you recover. You don't win super pretty. Yeah, you win by 20 points against Florida A&M, but that should have been a game. That was a name or score game. Kentucky could have won that game by 100 or 15 or 4. Like, whatever you want to win by, they could have done that. So you didn't learn anything about them. So really the last real feeling that we've gotten about this team was against UCLA. Following that up with this, that'd be ugly. You can't let that scenario unfold. You got to win this game.
Man, I can just feel like just even having to think about it, because we've both been kind of so far on this trip, I've been thinking that when we leave, it'll be after a Kentucky win. Kind of just even putting that thought out there. I just thought this would be a really long ride back. Just have to go drive past the same farmland, these same trees for 5 hours after a loss.
Look, if Kentucky loses tonight, I'm driving the whole way back home tonight.
Yeah,
get the hell out of there.
Yeah,
I'll be home at 5 a.m. I don't care. I am getting the hell out off this trip. I'm going to take some time away and just disappear for a while, because I can't. It's just not a scenario that can unfold.
They've got a great record right now with this. We'll go back to the positivity. But let's just. If Kentucky loses this, how bad of a loss would it be? I mean, this is a Missouri team, like you said, maybe a little bit of a fluky win against Illinois, but I don't know.
At that point, you could start arguing that maybe that's just who they are, that they are a hot shooting team, and, those teams do strike every once in a while, and, Alabama, when they are kind of playing that same run and gun style, put a ton of points on the board, get a ton of shots up, when they're rolling, they can beat anybody in college basketball, and they're kind of known as that, hotter ice cold type team. But maybe, that would just prove that Missouri is better than I'm giving them credit for, and maybe they aren't just a fluke. So I don't personally see that unfolding, but it would lead me to be more, give more credit to Missouri for being the team that maybe I should have given them the credit for going into this game. But
not so much a taken away.
I hope that we don't even have to have that conversation.
That would be nice. I have another question for you too, because again, you're constantly covering the team. The Sevier Wheeler only played 20 minutes in the last game. I mean, is that going to be a trend we see, or is that another? I'm sending a message to my senior. What do you think? Do we or is that maybe, is that the rotation? I really think, and I will let you answer the question I asked you, but I really think Sevier Wheeler could be absolutely phenomenal off the bench as an energy guy. Like, Darius Miller came off the bench as a senior, and he did pretty well.
Yeah, people sobbed their eyes out whenever he walked through the circle, on senior night, and played my old Kentucky home. He was one of those beloved Kentucky players, of the Cal era and leading up to it. it's not a bad thing if you come off the bench. It's not a bad thing if you're a crucial role piece on a Kentucky basketball team.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, do you think that it is possible that we start to see him only because he was playing, what, almost the whole game, right?
So I had heard earlier in the year, and I put this out on various platforms, said it on this show, that I was told that Cason Wallace would be getting the keys to this team as the season went on. And I thought again, we didn't learn much about the Florida A&M game because it was what it was. But just from a mentality standpoint of what Cal's looking for, him playing the last 11 minutes of that game and ballooning the lead from, I think it was like 7 in the second half up to 20 to close out the game, all with Xavier Wheeler on the bench, I thought that was really, really telling on Cal's end. And I think he had a quote after the game where he was referring to Cason Wallace as my point guard. Said some things like, you know, we got to get him used to being the point, you know, running point and, you know, being comfortable in that role and things like that. And, you know, he said it in the midst of, you know, Calipari spiels where he can say a lot of nothing in a lot of time. So you kind of take each quote and decipher them as you know, as necessary. But I thought that was really telling. He was referring to Cason just on the surface, referring to Cason as his point guard. Why would he say that unless he had a reason behind it? And I think it's totally fair. Cason, I like getting kind of intel from the teams that Kentucky's playing and, you know, what their thoughts are. And they left, even with Cason going 2-for-13 against UCLA, they left that game saying Cason Wallace is Kentucky's best player. And admittedly, they said if the keys are in Xavier Wheeler's hands as a 35-minute-per-game type of guy, Kentucky won't win anything. So that was not my quote. That was UCLA's quote. They won't win anything of substance this season. And I think that there's something to that. And I agree with what you said. I've said it, I mean, to the death of me, till my face has been blue.
Die on that hill.
The fact that Xavier has a crucial role in this team. He can be an unbelievable talent. Yes. At his best, he's amazing. But the reason he's amazing is because he's a change of tempo guy. He's a change of pace, ebb and flow guy that if you are in need of a spark plug, I'm going to go 95 miles an hour down the floor, 94 feet of hell. That's who Xavier Wheeler is. He is a guy that you plug in and say, we need a spark. Go give you a spark. That's who he is. He's a guy that's going to, you know, set the tone. He's going to, you know, initiate a fast break. He's going to get things rolling in transition and find opportunities, you know, a lob at the rim or, you know, a transition bucket for himself, you know, one of his patented scoops. Like, he has a very crucial role in this team, but it doesn't have to be as a 35-minute. It can't be a change of pace if it's the one pace the whole game.
Absolutely.
So kind of using that to, you know, maximizing those skills that he brings to the table and having your kind of even-keeled guy who doesn't get too high or too low in Cason Wallace as your go-to guy, I don't see how that's a flawed system. I don't know how that idea could go wrong for Kentucky. Let Cason play through his mistakes as the lead guard right now. He's going to turn the ball over. He's going to make dumb decisions. He's going to take bad shots. Let him play through that so when March rolls around, he can be the 33, 34, 35-minute-per-game guy. And Xavier can be your 25-minute-per-game guy as the change-of-pace guy, the tempo setter, and you know, really get things rolling off the bench. And I think that's your team. I think that is where Kentucky will be at its best. It's not attacking Xavier individually. It's not. It's understanding what he is best at, and that's what he's best at.
Yeah, and I wanted to say, and I'm glad you said that too, that, you know, there's been a little bit of criticism at Xavier Wheeler. You know, it's not really criticism of Xavier Wheeler. I agree with you. He has a huge role to play on this team. If this team is going to is going to win the SEC regular season outright, if they're going to compete for a Final Four national championship, Xavier Wheeler is going to have to be a part of that. I just think that his role needs to be limited a little bit. He is a great layup maker, as Cal says. I think he's a very cerebral player. But I do think that you lose something because of how they're able to play off of him, and they don't have to, you know, respect his shot. Cason Wallace, you have to respect his shot, and it's pretty clear. You know, I think you look at that team with Kevin Knox, And they started the year with Quade Green running the point, I think, for a lot of the time. And then we figured out how good Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was. And then he took over. And then by the end of the season, you were like, why was Quade Green ever running the point when Shai, we didn't know how good, how did we not know Shai was this
and
good?
Quade still had his moments. He won the game for Kentucky against Vanderbilt. The game,
right.
Game winner. Like, he had his moments where Quade was, you know, had he shined through.
But he also shot a three against Kansas State. But
irrelevant. But
you're right.
There's value everywhere. There's value. Yes. There's too much value on this team to not maximize it to the best of each of their individual abilities. It makes no sense to just force feed something that admittedly did not work to close out the year. When Kentucky was rolling, was when they were making shots. It was, you know, free flowing back and forth last season. When they struggled was when it was kind of the grind it out. Let's just milk this game out and plod their way to a victory. And sometimes it would result in losses. Unfortunately, that we're seeing that kind of extending into this season with just a new batch of pieces alongside some of the other returnees, and it has led to some pretty ugly offense, but the pieces are all there. I'm not concerned long-term about this. I still, to this day, think that this is a team that can be a title contender.
Absolutely.
As of right now, yes, the offense is really struggling. It's ugly, and it needs to improve. They need an offensive coordinator. I wish, you know, they're bringing in Liam Cohen on the football side. I wish there was a Liam Cohen equivalent.
It's Tyler Ulis.
That could just come in. Wow, what a transition.
Yeah.
How about that, Steven? This morning, news breaks by KSR, just putting that out there, that Tyler Ulis is back. He's been back with the program. He's been taking classes, full-time class. He's a full-time student at UK as he works his way back from that absolutely tragic car wreck that basically left him on crutches for 6 months, broke a ton of bones in his body, and he's just in nowhere near close to playing shape. Don't know if he will ever. He needs to be on the floor. I want him to be. He's my favorite point guard of all time. I want him to be on the basketball floor doing what he does best. However, if he can't be on the floor playing basketball, I want him to be coaching basketball. I want him to be around this program in whatever capacity he can be in, and Kentucky is set to make that official, bringing him in as a student assistant, very similar, identical to the role that Brad Calipari had on this team last season, and I think it's an absolutely crucial decision for John Calipari. You love what he can bring to a guy like Xavier Wheeler, how he can help a guy like Cason Wallace. I absolutely love the addition. Again, my favorite point guard of all time, Kentucky basketball history. So it's very hard to go wrong in that regard.
Well, it shows how Cal, you know, really how much he admires Tyler Ulis. And I don't know if I dreamed this. Did you say, was it you or somebody said that Cal had already reached out to Tyler Ulis at some point just to kind of get his thoughts on this team and how to run this offense?
So he was around at the very beginning. So
Okay. Just
kind of some backstory on this whole move. Kentucky's been trying to get him on as a full-time assistant, as a full-time student assistant since the beginning of the year. There was kind of some pushback on Kentucky's end about how to, you know, make it legal and make it, you know, gone through the right channels to make it done the right way. Kentucky finally found that loophole by having him, you know, he was just taking some part-time classes, and that didn't suffice for, the Kentucky regulations that up top. They finally found that loophole. He's a full-time student now, so he's coming in as a full-time student assistant. So yes, he's already been around the program, taking classes. He was there at Big Blue Madness. He's been there the entire season, but now he's going to be there in an on-court capacity. He's going to be able to help the team more as, you know, more than a glorified guest of sorts. So, you know, he's going to be able to be there and help walk through things and, you know, be the hands-on coach that, you know, use him to the best of his abilities as well. So, man, having a role model like that, a guy that knows the game, so, you know, known for his basketball IQ, the magic that he produces as the starting point guard of Kentucky. I mean, goodness gracious, what an unbelievable move for you know, guys like Xavier Wheeler, guys like Cason Wallace. Shoot, think of Adu Thiro, new power forward Adu Thiro in Cal's mind, but if you want him to be the big guard of sorts and learn how to play the guard position that I think he will be down the road, what better guy to learn from than arguably the best point guard in Kentucky basketball history? Size aside, just in terms of pure basketball IQ,
pure
no
basketball
better person
IQ
to learn from.
I loved his jump shot. Tyler Ulis was, you know, I think his size actually played to an advantage almost. I think he had that low center of gravity, you know, quick, kind of a pest. You know, Sahvir Wheeler, look, I mean, he doesn't shoot the ball as well as Tyler does, but or Tyler did. But, I mean, yeah, you know, we talked about his change of pace and his defense, and he's kind of, you know, Sahvir's kind of that little guy that just, like, as, you know, if you're just bringing the ball across half court, it's like, would you get off me? Like, he's just all up in your face. So I love that we're going to get Tyler Ulis kind of giving some guidance to Kentucky's point guards, and it can be nothing but a positive. I mean, Ulis is a great guy, he said, to bring back. A two-year player in Cal's system, so he's going to know the system because it has not changed. I don't believe it's changed since 2016.
You were literally, before this show started, he was watching highlights of the Wichita State game in 2014 during the start of Kentucky's.
We were parked when I did that, yeah.
The start of Kentucky's run, and he literally said, we literally just watched Kentucky run this exact same play against UCLA, the congestion, things like that. They won that game, and there are a lot of wins on the table for Kentucky to close out this year, and it starts tonight. Kentucky has to get the job done against a very hot Mizzou Tiger squad led by first-year coach Dennis Gates. Done a tremendous job to start his time here, but, you know, time for a nice little reality check that I hope Kentucky is.
Welcome to the SEC.
Yeah, that'd be tremendous as we get a nice little ESPN chime. So I think that should wrap this up. We want to give fans an opportunity to listen to this before the game actually starts.